thank you so much for listening to another episode of CX Chronicles Podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Brady Chisana. Tune in each week as we listen to amazing customer-focused business leaders from across the world sharing their personal stories about their teams, tools, process, and feedback. Check us out at cxchronicles.com today or listen on iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher. Hey, folks. Happy New Year's from CX Chronicles. Thanks so much, as always, for listening to the podcast and for tuning in each week to listen to amazing customer-focused business leaders from across the world. I'd love to just take a quick minute to let all of you know, please take a minute to stop by your favorite podcast player and leave the CX Chronicles podcast a review, letting other folks know why you love the show. It's super, super helpful for helping us find new listeners and for letting others know about all the fun that we have each week here. Do not hesitate to reach out for any of my friends that are building their businesses and building their teams and building their customer portfolio base. Do not hesitate to reach out to CX Chronicles if you need help getting ready for all that 2021 is going to bring, and you're looking for some additional help on the CX managed services side to help run your business and manage your customers into the future. Thanks so much, folks. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening to the CX Chronicles podcast. Aaron Scott Young, welcome to the show, sir.
Good to be here with you, man. I'm really excited to be with you. It's been a crazy time. So any chance we get to sit down and talk business and talk about best practices, it's always fun.
100%.
Rather than just talking about masks and sanitizing our hands.
Exactly. I think most people have had plenty of that type of talk for over these last 7-8 months. But today we're excited, Aaron. You've got an awesome story, awesome journey. You've been a part of building, managing, buying, selling some incredible companies. So I'm pumped to have you on the show today. Why don't you start off the show giving the CX Nation your two-minute elevator pitch. Give us a sense for how you got into the world of business and how you became the customer-focused business leader that you are today, sir.
I started my first company that I had employees. I had a regular payroll when I was 19. So that's 37 years ago. Jeez. I learned early that if we organized, if our employees knew exactly what we needed them to do and knew exactly what they were being measured on, that they would be able to function basically without a lot of oversight. So my first company I started when I was 19, I built it up to about 5,000 customers.
Wow.
And then I left for a year and a half on a mission trip. And it ran every day, 4 employees, not huge, but 4 employees, 2 trucks. It was the second recycling company in the Northwest.
Okay.
And we just were, and it ran. And every day I was go off being a missionary, I was making money. I came home and I went back to work and built it up a little bit bigger. And then I met this super cute girl that I wanted to marry. And I thought, I don't think she's going to want to be married to a garbage man. So I sold the company, almost 23, I sold my first company, made money, took that money, became one of the first cellular phone agents in the Northwest in 1986.
Yep.
And grew that into a bunch of locations. And it was the same thing. Now I had multiple locations, multiple managers, and we've discovered that if we said, here's the outcome we're looking for, here's what you're being tasked with, here's what we're going to measure, how, and give me several things that you're going to do this week that will move us toward the goals.
Sure.
By just that simple, way of keeping score, those people felt ownership of their stores. They ran the stores. They weren't ever surprised by what the owner was, you know, expecting but not expressing.
Yep.
Consequently, we end up with very loyal people. And then I sold that company. I got recruited into a public company as VP of sales.
Okay.
We had 350 offices around the world, so I learned a lot about public companies then. And then I'd made a lot of money in the stock. So after 3.5 years, I left that job and started buying companies. That was 1997. I started buying companies, fixing them up, reselling them, or aggregating them. And now that has morphed, even though I still do that, that's morphed into, we have a private equity company now, and we buy successful businesses that have the ability to really scale and take them public and take a, you know, take a $20 million company and make it into a $100 million company.
That's awesome. That's awesome, man. Couple of questions right out of the gate. So first things first, 19 years old, right? When just to get a business started, I'm thinking, I remember when I was 19 years old, I knew that I was already a dork of business and a student of business, and I knew that that's what I wanted to do, but not at all ready to the point of having a business. How did you get at such a young age in a position where you figured out how to pull off the mechanics of even starting a business, growing a business?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was, you know, they say necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Sure, yeah.
So what happened was, I'd gone off to my freshman year of college, my only year of college. I went to school. I came home at Christmas and I had no money for Christmas presents. And so I thought, well, what can I do? And I remember going on paper drives with the Boy Scouts when I was a Boy Scout. And so I went and borrowed a guy from church. I borrowed, who was the dad of one of my friends, borrowed a pickup truck. And I just started knocking on doors in streets where I thought they would probably subscribe to the newspaper. So a little bit more upscale neighborhoods where I thought most people would get the paper.
Yep.
And I started filling up this truck, and there was a wholesale recycling place downtown Portland, or down in the industrial area. And it was like $65 a ton for newspaper. So you could sell it by the ton.
Yep.
So I made like $3,000 in a week doing this. And I thought, well, dang, my dad makes $4,000 a month.
Yeah, right.
And he supports a family and owns a house and all kinds of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So I went back to school, which I don't even know if I got grades that year. I didn't care anything about school.
Hey, you didn't. It ended up working out okay for you, Aaron.
But here's what I did. So I thought, well, okay, because I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to do. So I thought, well, okay, let me look at a map of the city. What would be like, what do I think would be a daily route? Yep. And I started to map it out. And then I thought, well, we need to tell people we're coming, but I had no money really. So I thought, well, I'm going to make a flyer, but I'm going to make them skinny so I can get three on 1 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
Okay.
And I made like a newsletter, a calendar, and like other stuff like hauling to the dump or gutter cleaning or whatever.
Yeah.
And I put all of it on there. And then we just started, and I made the calendar where we could just circle, it'll be Monday the 13th of August.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Right? So the calendar was static. But see, what this was analog technology. I was building tools. And then I took a route book. I made a route book that said the address, is it a yes or a no? And then any notes, like, you know, it's in the garage or it's in the basement or there's a key to the gate or whatever.
Yep.
So we didn't have to knock on the door every month. We just know what to do.
Sure.
So I did all that when I was at college. I came home. I plastered the city. We'd show up the next day after we left flyers, and there's stacks of papers all out.
Wow.
Throwing them in the truck. I didn't have to knock on a door. I just throw them in. Yeah. Then I got another guy. Then we got another truck and two other guys. And then, so that was April when I got home from school. And in September, I left on the mission. So basically I had those 5 months to build how it was all going to work, to set up a bank account, to work out a deal with the recycling company where we set up an account with them, buy the two truck, borrowed a truck at first, then bought a truck, then bought another truck, right?
Yep.
All in those 5 months, I wasn't taking much money out. I was getting everything set up.
Sure.
We were building out these little route books. And next thing you know, I've got a turnkey business. Anybody can go to the address and follow the instructions and then follow a map.
Yep.
Anybody that could drive a car or drive a truck and read a map would know where to go.
Yeah.
And that experience, then I went on a mission. I made money the whole time. I sold the company for a profit. I got into the cellular business. I got married. We got married. We bought our first house. We bought our second house, all on the back of, and I was a kid. I was, you know, 25, 26 years old.
Right, right.
I got recruited into that public company as their VP of sales for 350 offices around the world, NASDAQ company, at 29 years old.
Wow.
Wow. I mean, so we'd crammed a lot of learning into that, you know, basically from 19 to 29.
Sure.
I'd learn a ton, and I'd already bought and sold two companies and employed dozens. And I mean, I don't know, the cell phone business had about 50 employees.
Wow.
We had a big service shop. I learned all this stuff as a 20 something. It was all kind of by instinct. I wasn't reading books. I was too busy doing.
Yep.
Now, I didn't do it all perfectly, but I did pretty well. And by the time I came out of the public company at 32 years old, is that right?
Yeah.
1996, 32 years old. I had a ton of money. I had a ton of experience. I had a really cool resume. Not that I ever went and got another job, but that's my one and only job.
That's a pretty good track record right there.
That was like, and I look back and I thought, who are these idiots that hired this 29-year-old? But because I think I was more bluster than brilliance, but but I did it, and we came out, and I was able to use what I learned in those first the two companies and the public company, because the public company, I had to figure out how to do things that would work over 350 offices in multiple countries.
Yeah.
And thankfully, just the world worked out, the experience worked out, where I got to do all that. And that was a great crash course in how to take a company that's maybe struggling, or maybe has the leadership has hit the ceiling and they don't know where else to go, and to go in there and be able to do more with it.
Yeah.
And I mean, they started, it was their idea. You know, it's always easier to edit than it is to write.
Sure.
And so I've written 4 books, and I tell you, it's way better for me to talk the book, have somebody else write it.
Yes.
And then I come back and go, can we fix that?
Absolutely. Hey, that's why podcasting is great, right? You talk these things out, you get to vocalize it and verbalize it. And then frankly, later on, a lot of times some of the best ideas or the best conversations or the best discussion flows, those become outlines later on that you can go and write.
It's so, you know, I've often said, I don't know what I'm thinking till I hear it come out of my mouth. And so I'm one of those auditory guys. So anyway, I don't want to take too much time on, you asked me for 2 minutes and I think I've taken 10.
That's fine. No, that's great. It's
the point is learning those things gave me, because I was, and I had some struggles in there. Don't misunderstand. There were some things that didn't work that I tried during that time, but, or some things that I started that I didn't do very well with, but I sold it and somebody else did very well with it.
Sure.
So it's not like I'm some infallible guy. I just keep going. I just keep trying.
Yep.
But by the time I got done with the public company and started buying my first existing companies and sorting them out and fixing them up, and that went pretty fast too, because I left the public company the end of 96. They kept me on for a year on a consulting agreement, where I kind of looked around and started trying to get my feet under me, because they kept me at my same pay package, but I was free and I could sell my shares. And so in fall of 97 is when I bought my first company. And by 2000, I'd purchased about 8 companies and either fixed them and sold them or merged them. I bought my biggest company in 2001, which has now grown. We're getting ready to go public. I mean, it's really grown. And I've bought and sold a bunch of companies since then. But those early experiences in my 20s and very early 30s helped me understand both why do things work? How do I focus on the customer? I need to have a goal, but the goal's got to include what the customers want.
Yep.
Because if we don't meet the customer where they are, the effort it takes to get them to come to us is very, very expensive.
Big time.
Not nearly as useful. So if we can figure out how do we figure out what people want and then just give them what they want,
yep,
and then do it in a way that is infused with integrity, so they want to keep working with us more. And you do the same thing with your employees. You make sure you have to. I'm just dumping on you here. I learned early This is logical, but most people don't act on it. You know that people come to work to make money.
Yep.
Ideally, they will like the work they're doing. They will find some sort of satisfaction from the work. But at the end of the day, people work in order to pay for the discretionary part of their life.
Yep.
Their hobbies, their travel, their family, their, you know, shoe collection or whatever sure. it is.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not doing it for me. They're doing it for them.
Right, right.
And if I can make it a desirable place to be for those hours, then we're both happier. But at the end of the day, they're a human resource I'm bringing in. I'm trying to find the best person I can find, pay them the most money I can justify paying them, and then letting them do what they're great at doing. And if the more I can let them design their job, as long as it's getting to the goal,
totally, yep,
the more they'll infuse their own brain power and their own heart into the job.
Yep.
And somebody like that, if you give them the right environment, you don't have to look over their shoulder all the time. And by the way, they don't want to leave that job.
Right.
Totally. Because nobody's ever treated them like that. When I bought this company, I was saying we're getting ready to go public. When I bought that company, it had 80 employees and turnover was 300% per
year. Wow.
Can you imagine?
Wow.
300. Every job was being replaced three times a year.
Just a different, constantly different squad. Yeah.
Now, our average tenure is 14 years. Now, I've owned the company 19 years. So that tells you, we went in, we got rid of all the bad management, we created a new culture, which takes time for people to believe in.
Absolutely, yep.
We restructured how we hired, we restructured using the technology I've been using forever, which is scoreboards and a certain kind of job description. I teach the whole thing in a course I teach called The Unshackled Owner,
okay.
which is, here's the exact process I've used to do dozens of companies and now take tons of companies public.
Yep.
Right. It's the same. I use the same system.
Yep.
Doesn't matter what industry, same rules apply for how you run and scale a company.
Yep.
It doesn't matter what the details are. Just here's the chunks that need to be in place. So anyway, the point is we learned a lot and by starting small, a little recycling business, a cellular phone business that was bigger, a public company, somebody else's, but I got to really stretch my wings and then buying companies that were already screwed up. And I, you know, they needed help. So I could just experiment on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I wasn't coming up and messing something up. I was taking something messed up and trying to fix it. So the path has led into a situation where now we do really substantial deals. We do some really big deals. And where before I might've been looking for a company I could buy for $250,000 or $300,000. Now we're out going, well, we kind of were looking for companies in the 20 to 40 million range.
Okay. Okay.
You know, yep. That doesn't mean we don't buy smaller companies for strategic reasons, but my point is by starting small, but figuring out what works and what doesn't and doing what works and stopping what doesn't, even if you want to do something that, but you know from history is a stupid idea.
Yep.
But you still want to do it. Or somebody else says, let's do it. And you're like,
yeah.
I have to keep my blinders on and say to what works.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And you take care of your employees and you take, you know, we have almost 90% renewal amongst our clients.
Wow.
Let's be honest. It's 87%.
Okay.
87% renewal of our clients. You keep your employees, you keep your clients, right? We get the vast majority of our new sales come from referrals.
Okay. Which is huge.
This is huge.
That's huge.
But it's all because we didn't shotgun all over the place. We stuck with systems that work and just improved on them and took them from analog, a little hand stapled notebook that I made to, you know, you eventually can create software and be able to put somebody in front of it and let them run, let them operate. But too many people try to start at the end. You know, they kind of, well, you have to have everything perfect before we start. And I found I'm a big believer in the whole idea of minimum viable product.
Absolutely, 100%.
Minimum viable concept and test it while you don't have a lot at stake and figure out what works and then throw fuel on that.
Big time.
And then hire great people and let them be great without being all over their back.
Yep.
And you can grow really cool companies.
You absolutely can. And you know, Aaron, I'm glad you brought up the MVP point too, because if you think about some of the fastest growing companies on planet Earth, they really did start off with a simple idea, a simple product, a simple offering. And by listening to the market, listening to the customer, understanding what made them tick, understand what made them maybe buy more or use the product more, then your MVP over time, it gets bigger. It's like a snowball. It gets bigger. It gets more powerful. You get more of the features injected into the products and service. And before you know it, your MVP that you started with, now it's applicable to a huge market. There's a whole market space that's ripe for that product or that service offering.
Yeah. Well, you find out, you start off small and the market, if you will listen to the market will tell you what's working and not working.
Yep.
What's what they want and what they don't want. That's the other thing. I have so many business owner clients. I mean, just many tens of thousands of business owner clients.
Okay.
And it's very common for them to come say, you know, I'm beating my head against a wall. And I'll say, well, tell me what you're doing. And they'll tell me, and I'll say, well, why are you doing it? Like, what's your evidence that this is something that is marketable?
Yep.
Right. Well, I don't know. I just had this idea, or I went through this thing and I never want somebody else to go through it, or I wrote this book, or I have this system I devised.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, okay, well, that's cool. But what makes you believe anybody want, you've been trying to do it now for 5 years.
Yeah.
You've lost your marriage. You're broke.
Right.
So
right.
Like, and you still have no sales. So why do you believe this is any good?
Yep. Yep.
And they like, they can't understand it. They believe because it came out of their imagination, it must be good.
Correct.
And I learned a long time ago, there's a ton of stuff people don't want to buy from you, but there's something they want to buy. Find out what it is.
Yes. Yes.
Give them what they want. Quit trying to force feed people things that you think are cool. Instead, find out what they want and they'll buy it.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, it's so dumbbell easy, but it's most creative thinkers are not, they're not there. They want to explode out onto the market with something cool.
Yep.
And I can't tell you how many people I've said in both directions. I've said, you know, that idea sucks and it's never going to work.
Yeah.
And you should stop today.
Right. Like,
how can I stop? I've been doing it for 5 years. I'm saying, is it working? No. Okay. Stop.
Stop it. Yeah.
Old
yeah.
Turkish proverb says, no matter how far you go down the wrong road, turn back.
Yeah. You got to turn around.
Turn back. The other thing is I've said to individuals who are working at a job, and I've listened to them and they've explained what they're doing and they're frustrated with their management team or whatever.
Yep.
I remember one gal, I said to her, I was speaking an event. She was attending the event. She'd gotten scholarshiped in because she's just this young, energetic kid working for a company that was involved in retrofitting buildings to save water.
Okay. Yep.
And she was far and away their top salesperson. She's like 24 years old. Little skinny girl in a plumber kind of world, a bunch okay. of blue collar guys, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I said, I'll tell you what. I said, do you think you can go find your own deals and stuff? She goes, oh, absolutely. I said, okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. If you have the guts to go quit your job, I'll give you 90 days of your current, whatever you're making a month so you can live.
Yep.
I'll pay for 90 days. I don't want anything from you. Nothing at all. I'll pay you nine, which was probably, you know, $12,000-$15,000.
Okay.
I said, go quit your job and go out and get your first job. And I'll bankroll you for 90 days. She did it. Well, guess what? Now she's Forbes 30 under 30 for clean energy. She's got her own line of plumbing products that are manufactured and she's making millions of dollars. She's like 31 years old.
Wow.
She's just crushing it because she had everything that was needed to go out, but she didn't have the runway to do it.
Sure. Yeah.
So yep. Some people I say, you're beating your head against the wall and you're going to die beating your head against the wall. So just knock it off. Go get a job.
Yep.
Oh, you shouldn't be having a job. You should be running a company. I'll help you.
Yep.
Right. And it's really fun because she was doing something very simple.
Yep.
How do we conserve water? How do we make a commercial building more profitable?
Yep. Right.
How, you know, what? How do we solve a couple of problems that are world-class problems? She had a way to do it. And she's crushing it ever since.
That's awesome.
The one thing I'd say to people that are listening is, if you've been struggling and struggling and struggling, you have to ask yourself why and get some outside opinion. There was a really very successful company who had taken over $2 billion of ideas from napkin to big box wholesale sales.
Okay. Yep.
They came to me with a new idea of something they wanted to do. And I listened to them for an hour and a half. And I said, guys, I love you. And you're my friends, you know, we're, you know, acquaintances.
Sure.
But I said, if you do this, you're going to go bankrupt. This is a horrible idea. Don't do it. And the wife, who is the CEO of their company, got really angry with me, got really pissed at me. And said, no, you don't understand. No. And she cried and he was going, well, you know, and it was this whole weird thing. And, but you know what? They didn't do it.
Okay.
And they ended up doing something else that they've been doing great at. And they've, in times when we've gone in to do a deal or she speaks at my events sometimes, they always say, we came to Aaron with this big idea that we had and he told us no, and we got mad. But he was right.
He was right.
And he saved our business.
Yeah.
And some people don't want to hear, and a lot of their people around them don't want to tell them, your idea is crappy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So don't do it.
Yep.
And I think I've made more friends and get more Christmas cards from people I barely know saying, thank you for telling me to quit that company and go get a job.
Thank you for telling me to stop.
Thanks for giving me permission to stop.
Yeah.
And it's not that we don't want people to go out and start businesses. We do. But it's very important to figure out, what does the customer want?
Yes.
How do we serve them? Because when we start a business as the leader, our goal, forget the political election, forget COVID-19, forget George Floyd, forget all of that. An entrepreneur's job is to see not get involved emotionally in what's going on, stand back,
yep,
observe what's going on, and adjust to what is going on currently in the market. If you do that, you'll have longevity.
Yep.
If you don't do it, you may get lucky for a few years and then you'll be on your butt and you'll go, what happened?
Right, right. Yeah.
And so anyway, hopefully this was sort of useful information.
This is awesome, Aaron. I think the one thing that just fits so perfectly with our audience and with the folks who listen to this show, many of these people they're literally either building, leading, managing, or scaling the front line of businesses. And they're the people that are responsible for talking to customers. They're the people that are responsible for learning for the customers. They're the people that are responsible for understanding how you can quantify some of that voice of customer feedback, bring it right back to leadership. And maybe leadership thinks that next quarter's OKRs need to look like this. But many of the folks that are part of the Six Nation, they're the people that are coming back to them saying, wait a minute, nobody cares about those things. The market actually doesn't want that new feature. They don't want those new pricing solutions. They're asking for these things. And that's a big part of what we do at this show. And that's a big part of what our audience thinks about every single day.
Sorry, I was going to cough right when you stopped talking. So,
it's no worries. No worries. So
yes, Aaron, yes. It cannot be overstated how critically important it is to listen, not always do what they say, but listen to the people
right.
in the trenches. There's a show called Undercover Boss.
Yeah.
It's all about coming down from the ivory tower into the trenches.
Get into the weeds. Get into the weeds.
Yeah, and learn what's actually being dealt with day to day. You got all your planning up here, but your planning is important. but it's only useful if it actually affects a change or improves your productivity.
Yep.
Or comes up with a new product that people actually want.
Yes. Yep.
And remember, as a leader, I want to say this too. As a leader, you have customers out there, but your team is also your customer.
Yep.
Right? To some extent, you're their customer as well. But really, you know, let me end with this, or whatever you want to end with. But I know you said 30 minutes, and we're about at 30 minutes. So everybody in all of my companies, we set the highest level goals, and then we break them down by departments.
Okay.
All right. I'm always at the very top of the org chart, right? I'm chairman. I'm the guy at the top. I always have the same four things that I'm being measured on. No matter what company, the four things that we measure me on: top line revenue,
yep.
How good are we at making sales or renewing people? Bottom line, the EBITDA or the profit.
Sure.
Why? How efficient are we with the money that we bring in? Client satisfaction and employee satisfaction.
Yeah.
Those are the four things that I'm measured on in all of the companies I'm involved in. How are we doing on sales? How are we doing on profitability? Are we holding on to our customers? Are we holding on to our employees?
Yeah.
Are they happy?
Right. Right.
If an owner can get their business to a place where they can focus on that, and then divide up that work amongst really great leadership team and the best people, whether they're in your brick and mortar building, they're virtual, they're offshore. I don't care who you hire, but are you able to explain, here's the goal.
Yep.
Here's this department's part of the goal. Here's how you as an employee move the needle by your success or failure. So the even the receptionist or the mailroom or the person in the warehouse or the AP clerk, everybody knows why what they do matters.
Yep.
And they can see how their day-to-day efforts affect the big company. If you can get that built, you have got lightning in a bottle.
Big time.
And it's a wonderful thing. And by thankfully, I somehow figured it out early. And it's been a real benefit, a real blessing in my life. And I also know for tens of thousands of business owners and many hundreds of employees over the years. So anyway, it's not that I'm so great, but if you figure out the rules and follow the rules work.
Yeah. It increases your chances of success quite a bit. Aaron, this is awesome. You've given us a ton of things to think about across team. You've given us a number of different things to think about across tools as your business evolves, as your business grows, process, and then the feedback part, both on the customer side and the employee side. This has been super, super helpful. Before we wind down today's show, where can people find you, Aaron? Where can people learn more about your business?
So I'll give you two websites. For most small business owners, I invite them to go look at LaughlinUSA.com. So Laughlin, you can put it in your notes, but it's LaughlinUSA.com. LaughlinUSA.com. We're one of the top asset protection, tax planning, form your entity, do your corporate compliance, all of that there. It's weird. Laughlin is the foundation for whatever you're trying to build.
Okay.
Okay. And then if they want to look more at me, they just can go to my name, AaronScottYoung.com.
Perfect.
And that's kind of a program. Like I teach one class. It's my program called The Unshackled Owner. I mentioned it earlier. And we do that on corporate levels. And I mean, I've done that with CoverGirl, Max Factor, WebMD, and others. And we do it for the regular business person. It doesn't matter. And between those two things, there are tons of resources, free stuff, downloads, whatever, that may give them some stuff to work on.
That's fantastic. Well, Aaron, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on the CX Chronicles podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Hey folks, this is Adrian, your host of the CX Chronicles podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in to amazing customer-focused business leaders each and every week. I wanted to take a minute to talk about a couple brand new product and service offerings at CXC. Number one, customer scorecards. Have you had a minute to take a look at our CX scorecards and understand how you're doing across team, tools, process, and feedback? Number two, customer feedback reporting. A number of different companies are looking for ways to get better customer feedback reporting. Reach out to CXC today if you need help setting up your MPS, CSAT, product SAT, or customer effort scoring. Number three, customer experience coaching. Take the time to become a customer-focused business leader. We've done some amazing work with a number of awesome CXers out there. Reach out to us today at CXC to learn how you can get your customer-focused business leader playbook for success. Check us out at cxchronicles.com. Thank you for listening to another episode of the CX Chronicles podcast. We're thrilled to have you as a part of the CX Nation, tuning into customer-focused business leaders from across the world. Be sure to check out the CXC website, and as always, find us on any of your favorite podcast players, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. Thanks so much for making this show a reality and being a part of the CX Nation. And as always, folks, remember to make happiness a habit.